Al pnei meisoi, vaydaber el pnei ches lemor. So the first approach is to the bnei ches, and it tells him like this: ger v'toshav anachimochem, ger v'soshav anachimochem. Now, ger and toshav are contradictory terms. Ger means I'm here temporarily, and toshav means I'm settled here, I'm a citizen here. So Rashi says it's true. This is the two approaches of Avraham Avinu. He approached them as a ger, and as such, I'm a stranger, and therefore I need your permission, I need your agreement to sell. But in case you're giving me, they are going to give me a hard time, then I'm a toshav, which means I will invoke my special rights as a toshav. You know, it's God's promise that He's going to give me the land, which means that there is an undercurrent of a threat here. Meaning, as long as you deal with me fairly, fine. The moment you don't deal with me fairly, I can use the method of toshav, which means God will give it to me even against your will. So we're going to come back to this ger and toshav, which is crucial to this parsha. Now, tenuli achuzas kever imochem vekberom meisim ilfonoi. He's asking them for an achuzas kever. The bnei ches are the owners of the land. They have to agree to give him a piece of land to bury sorrow. And in posuk vov, they say, "Go right ahead, shmoenu adoini nesi elokim atov esoicheinu. We recognize who you are. You are a spiritual leader of ours. So therefore, obviously, nobody's going to deny the right to choose a kever. Go right ahead. Take whatever you want." Now, this doesn't end, of course, on the surface. This should end the dialogue. Finish. End of the parsha. No. Avraham Avinu says to them, now you must go to Ephron ben Zohar, posuk ches, and he should sell me the Me'oras HaMachpelo, B'Ktzei Sodeyu. At the end of his field there is a cave, and the cave is Me'oras HaMachpelo, and I'll pay him for it. So the Malbim says right here on the spot, they already agreed, why does he have to go to Ephraim for, right? And if he meant to go to Ephraim, why doesn't he go to Ephraim right away? Why does he have to go to the Bnei Ches first? So the Malbim explains simply that here there is such a thing as restriction of land ownership. The land is restricted to the citizens, the people who live there. You're not allowed to sell land to strangers, except if the communal leadership agrees. So this is why Avraham Avinu first goes to communal leadership, and then he goes to the person that he wants to buy it from in order to get the permission from the person too. In other words, he needs the general permission, because without that he can't even approach Ephron. Once he gets the permission of the communal leadership, then he can go to Ephron. What does he say to Ephron? Same thing. V'yitein lias me'oras ha-machpelo. Again, he's Ve'efron yoshe besol bnei ches, and Ephron is yoshe besol bnei ches. Says Rashi, yoshe, that all of a sudden he became important. They gave him a very high position, because when he was talking to the leadership of the community, Ephron wasn't even there, so he couldn't have been that important. All of a sudden, he's very important, and like some commentaries say at the end of Pasuk Yud, Lechol boyeshari roi. He's in the gates of the city. The gates of the city, that's where the courts used to be established. So you see that the men became very important. Why did he become important? Says Rashi, because of the recognition of the importance of Avraham Avinu, they felt that anyone who Avraham Avinu has to deal with, we have to give him an important position. That's how important Avraham Avinu is. So there is a complete recognition of the place of Avraham Avinu in the world, right? They recognize him as the Nesi Elohim. Now, so here is the Nesi Elohim, right, talking to a person that until today was a nobody. And in the words of the Shem Yishmuel, the word Ephron comes from the word Ophor, which is what? You know, it's ashes, like. Nothing, something which is absolutely not worth anything. That's what the state of Ephron was. Right? Avraham is Nesi Elohim. Ephron is down there, right? And Avram approaches him and says the same thing. I want the cave of the Machpelah. So, what does Ephron say to him? You prosecute Aleph. Lo yadoini. No, no. No what? Shmoini. Hasote nosati lo. Ve'amora shaboy lechone satiyo. So Rashi learns, no, I don't want to take any money. Okay. But the Malbim says there is another meaning to the word no. Because what is he telling it here? He says, Hasode nosati lo. The field. Who asked for a field? Take a look at the request of Avraham Avinu. There is no request of a field. The request is, in Pasuk Tes, the cave at the end of the field. It doesn't even take room. It's underground. And he says, no, no, no. You take the field. And then he says like this. Pasuk Yud Gimel says Avraham Avinu changes the whole request. Vaydaber lechron baznei amor et lemor. Achim atol hushmoeni. Nosati kesev asode kach mimeni. You want to sell me the sode also? Okay. I'll buy the sode also. So here the chutzpah. I mean, in a very respectful way, right? He wants to make a deal. Why not? I mean, he sees Avraham Avinu, a wealthy man, right? He wants the cave. How much can he charge for a cave underground? I mean, there isn't much that he can make from it. Why can't he say, you know, it all goes together. The cave at the end of the field has to be sold with the rest of the field. So then, of course, he left to buy the field also. But of course, it's not nice that I should ask him for money. So meanwhile, I'll say what? Take it for free. Knowing very well that Avraham Avinu is not going to take it for free. He's going to offer me money, and that's going to be a very good deal for me. That's what Ephron is doing. So he tells him like this. Pasuk 15. Adoni Shmoini, Eretz Arba Meyo Shekel Kesa Benyu Menchom Mali. For something that's worth 400 shekel, pieces of silver, go ahead, take it. Then it says, Vayishma Avraham. What is that, Vayishma Avraham? Doesn't mean he heard. Of course, if he answers, he heard. It means he understood the hint. He wants 400 shekel, which was, in those days, an outrageous figure for the field, but he wants it. I'll give it to him. And not only does he give it to him, but you can give silver of different qualities. Even silver, even a piece of silver, there are different qualities of silver. There is a silver that has that is purer probably, or not so pure. Some pieces of silver are accepted only locally. Some pieces of silver are accepted all over the world. So all Ephron is asking for 400 pieces of silver, average pieces of silver. So what does Avraham Avinu do? He even goes overboard. Arba meyo shekel kesef oiver lasocher. What is oiver lasocher? It means currency that's acceptable all over the world. In other words, he paid even more than he was asked for. Which, of course, requires an explanation. That Avraham Avinu insisted that he wants to pay. No. Also not simple. Also not simple. Why did he insist that he wants to pay? Somebody wants to give him a present. Why not? Did he reject the present from Paro? He took the present from Paro. The only time we see Avraham Avinu rejecting a present is by the Melech's Dome. If you remember the story of the Melech's Dome, he offers him the spoils of the... And he says, no, I'm not going to take it, because then you are going to say that you made Avraham Avinu rich. That's not the situation here. He's not making Avraham Avinu rich. Why doesn't Avraham Avinu just plainly accept? You want to give me a present? Very nice. Why not? No, he doesn't want a present. But the problem is, why did he overpay for it? Why did he bargain with him? If you have a right to bargain? No, the Torah says not only didn't he bargain, but he gave him even more than what he wanted. He wanted 400 average pieces of silver, and he gave him over la soker. That requires an explanation, obviously. And at the end, take a look. First it was the cave, then it was the cave and the fields, And then if it seems possible, Yudzayim Vayokum stay at Ron Hashem HaMachpelo Hashem HaSodeh VeHamoro Asher Boi VeChol Oetz Asher BaSodeh. Not only did he pay for the field, but everything, all the trees around the field. VeChol Oetz Asher VeChol Gvuloi Soviv. Not only in the field. In the gvul of the field, in the fences around the field, in the area around the field, the trees over there, he also ended up paying for that too. So in order to understand why the Torah goes through so many details to tell me how he offered for free and Avraham Avinu decided to pay, and not only didn't he bargain, but he paid even more. Fine, that's very nice. But why does the Torah have to tell it to me? I mean, there are two things. First of all, that Avraham Avinu did it. Second of all, that the Torah sees that as such an important fact that the Torah has to put it down for future generations, that we should remember that. What is it teaching me? Obviously, it's not teaching me that we should overpay in our business deals. That's not the point. So what is the point? It says in the Midrash the following statement. When the goyim come to you and they tell you what is your right over Eretz Israel, you should tell them, my right over Eretz Israel is based on three acquisitions. The acquisition of Avraham Avinu of this day Machpelo, the acquisition of Yaakov Avinu of Shechem. It says that Yaakov Avinu ben Meyoksito, with 100, whatever it was, paid for this a certain portion of the city of Shechem, and David HaMelech, who buys the Har HaMoriah, the Mokom HaMikdash, in Sefer Shmuel from Aravno HaYivusi, simple pshat is it's a goy. A Yevusi from the tribe of the Yevusim that used to live in Eretz Israel still. He bought the land from him, and that's Yerushalayim. So when the goyim say, what is your right? You tell him here. Three things that were acquired. So on the surface, that medrash is very, very difficult because, I mean, all it proves. I mean, if they accept it, first of all, I mean, you're showing him in the Torah and say, you see, it says in the Torah. So if you're already showing him in the Torah that you bought Shechem and you bought Hebron and you bought Yerushalayim, show him that Hashem says the whole land of Eretz Yisrael is yours, Memonisha. If they accept the Torah, if this document is acceptable to them, in the document it says the whole land of Israel is yours. What is the point that the Midrash tells you, show them that the little portion of Miras HaMachpelah and a little portion of Shechem and a little portion of Beis HaMikdash, that's ours. What's the point of the Midrash? Say the Mephoshim the following. And there's one more added problem. It's not really a question, but it's an observation. Avram is involved, and Yaakov is involved, and David HaMelech is involved. Who is missing? Yitzchok is missing. Why isn't Yitzchok part of the acquisition of the land of Eretz Israel? We don't find Yitzchok acquiring land. And it's very odd because the strongest relationship of any of the Ovos to the land of Eretz Israel is Yitzchok. Just the opposite. Avraham comes and goes. Yaakov comes and goes. Yitzchok can't leave the land of Eretz Israel. He's an Oilot Mimo. He's at a level that the only place in the world that he can live is Eretz Israel. So, on the one hand, we see that his relationship towards Israel is the strongest, the most intense, and he's the one that doesn't appear. What really is going on? So it says in this forum the following idea. Really, it's all based on Avraham Avinu's statement, Ger v'tosha v'nochi imochem. It means like this. The Jews are promised the land of Eretz Israel. Only on condition. If you merit the land of Eretz Israel, then the land of Eretz Israel is yours. You don't merit it, you lose it. You merit it, you gain it again. That is the relationship between Klal Israel and Eretz Israel. Now, but we know that, like Chazal say, the world was created really with Midas Adin. The way things were supposed to run, they're supposed to be established in the world was Alpi Midas Adin, according to strict justice. Meaning, the way the world was supposed to be established in the beginning is with absolute perfection, and anything which is imperfect immediately ceases to exist. There is no room for flaws. There are no second chances. Things are wrong, they get destroyed. That is the Midah, that among the names of God that represents this Midah is what? Elohim. That is the Midah of Elohim. It's Elohim also means nature, because that's the law of nature also. The laws of nature doesn't give you second chances. Somebody falls down, right, or something breaks, the law of gravity, so the law of gravity will give him a second chance. If it broke, it broke. There's no second chances. So if Hashem would run the world the same way that he runs the laws of nature without second chances, that would be strict justice. But because he wanted human being to survive, so there is no room for imperfection. So Hashem added, so to speak, he added a second Midah, Midas HaRachmin. And Midas HaRachmin together with Midas HaDin is what runs the world. This is why. In the first chapter of Bereishis, the only Shem Hashem that's used is Elohim. Bereishis for Elohim, right? Everything is Elohim. In the second chapter, Biyoim Bero, Hashem Elohim is Hashemayim Esoretz. It's Hashem Elohim. Why? Because Yud Kei Vav Kei hints to the Midas HaRachmin. So when we have Hashem together with Elohim, that's when you can have strict justice whenever possible, but you always have like a second chance. Okay, now. The original establishment of the relationship between Jews and the land of Israel is din, which means merit. You merit it, you get it. You don't merit it, you don't get it. You lose it. It's as simple as this. Avraham Avinu wanted to establish a new pattern in the relationship between Jews and the land. That even if in the future, remember, everything that it says in the Maaseh Ogois is because it's Simen Lebonim, it establishes a pattern for future generations. In future generations, there will be generations that will not marry the land of Israel. So Avraham Avinu wants to give those Jews a second chance. Even if according to your merits, you don't deserve the land of Israel, there is a roundabout way that you can get it. But for that, you need the act of acquisition. Now, what is the act of acquisition? The act of acquisition means, first of all, that the Gentile has to be willing for you to have it. You have to pay a price. But there has to be, meaning, your second way of coming towards Israel is if the Goyim agree. Now, it says that the Jews in Golus Bovel weren't in a very high spiritual level. There were a lot of flaws spiritually by the Jews after the 70 years in Golus Bovel. They do come back towards Israel in spite of that. But how do they come back towards Israel? Not by force. With the permission of the Gentile. Words, the permission of the Gentile becomes crucial in this second way of getting to Eretz Israel. The ideal way would be we don't ask any permission, we don't ask anybody to do us favors, we do it because we are Tosha. That's the concept of Tosha. When are you a Tosha of Eretz Israel? When do you establish the real relationship between yourself and the land of Eretz Israel? When you merit the land of Eretz Israel. When are you in the status of Ger? When you don't merit it. So then you have to buy it. Okay? Now, the problem with buying is that, so that is the point. The point is like this. Not buying, getting it as a present, would have established, what is a present? A present always has strings attached. There is no such a thing as a present without strings attached. Now it's a present you give because you'll get, either you got something, so you express your thanks with a present, or you want something in return. A present leaves things attached. Right? That's why the Gemara says that a person, Elio Anovi, who wanted to live a life of independence, so it says, Soine Matona Sichye, meaning he wanted to be independent of the strings attached, meaning you don't have to do it. But if you want to lead a life of complete independence from other human beings, don't accept presents. So therefore, buying represents no strings attached. More. If somebody gives you even a bargain, somebody makes you a discount. So even though if you are paying for it, but So there are short, small strings attached, but it's still not a complete vine without any attachment of yours. Avraham Avinu wants to cut off the attachment of Ephraim completely from the land. Therefore, he'll pay him even more than what he asks in order to break the relationship of Ephraim to the land, even though we need his agreement. Because Avraham Avinu is establishing the second path towards the getting the land of Eretz Israel. Now, comes out according to this, that Avraham Avinu is using this second method, al pi midas harachamim. Now, remember we asked, why doesn't Yitzchok buy a piece of Eretz Israel? What is the midah of Yitzchok? What? Gvura. What is Gvura? Gvura is din. Gvura is din. It's going according to strict justice. Complete submission to God, that his own personal interests don't matter at all. It's only the submission to Hashem. It's din. Midas ha-din. That's Yitzchok. Yitzchok is midas ha-gvura, which is midas ha-din. Comes out according to this, that the whole nature of Yitzchok is against a relationship that's based on midas ha-rachamim. It's only din. So therefore, buying a piece of Eretz Yisrael, it doesn't fit with the nature of Yitzchok. So it's only David HaMelech. And David HaMelech, it says, his midah, a midah that is kolel, that includes Avraham Yitzchok v'Yaakov. So once it's a combination of Avraham Yitzchok v'Yaakov, so David HaMelech also buys it. But Yitzchok is not shayach to buying land. He represents din, and in din you don't buy land. Okay, so now. Settings for him. That symbolically speaking, the land of Eretz Israel is like, is established, like, it's as if like the nails, the pegs that attach the land of Eretz, that hold the land of Eretz Israel are three. Like in everything else, the number three is crucial. That's the establishment of something. And those are the three cities. Shechem in the north, Hebron in the south, and Yerushalayim in the middle. You have that, and symbolically you have the essence of Eretz Israel. Not a coincidence at all. What did Avraham Avinu buy? A part of Hebron. What did Yaakov Avinu buy? A part of Shechem. What did David HaMelech buy? Yerushalayim. If you have that, you have Eretz Yisrael. Those are the keys to Eretz Yisrael. Okay? So, if so comes out that the Maaseh Ovo of Sirmen Levonim, the lesson of this Parsha is the establishment of a new pattern for the Jews to get back to Eretz Yisrael through the permission of the Gentile. Right? It's not a coincidence. It happened by Koresh, after the 70 years of Golus Bavel, and of course in 1948 it's not an exception either. We only went in because the Goyim allowed us. In other words, the second way, we didn't merit it, it's because the Goyim allowed us. So of course it has to go like Avraham Avinu, it has to be together gear. The only way that we can become completely independent of the Goyim allowing it is by becoming a Toishov. What does it mean becoming a Toishov? By going back to Hashem's promise, which is conditional to our merit. So that's the only way that you can disattach yourself from the goy. Now, the clay, yeah.
Why wouldn't Avraham pay the mortgage first?
That's the thing, because the Torah wanted to stress that he paid him to a point that Ephraim completely removed himself. Because on the surface it sounds like Ephraim is doing him a favor, right? Ephraim is a nobody. Avraham Avinu is such a great man. And Ephraim is so interested that Avraham Avinu should buy it from him because that makes him important. So Avraham Avinu doesn't want any of that. Avraham Avinu wants Ephraim to get everything and more than what it's worth it in order to establish the fact that there are no strings attached. Because the goal is to make the goy not have any strings attached to Eretz Israel. Am levoto. The goal is to be alone, to be independent.
What is kosher?
Toshav is somebody, is a citizen, somebody who is establishing the land. Now there's a very interesting Kliyokor here. Kliyokor pays attention to number one, the number 400 shekels. And he pays attention also to the fact that throughout the Parsha, the name Ephraim is spelled, how is it spelled? Ayin, Pei, Reish, Vov, Nun. Except in one place. When it says, in Posuk Tezayin, Vaishma Avrom Elefroim, Vaishkol Avrom Leefroim. When he accepts the money, the vov disappears. It's interesting. All of a sudden, the vov disappears.
Which part?
Impossible. Tet Zayin. Right. And throughout, before also, Ephron is with a vov, except in Pasuk Tet Zayin, the second time around. Vaishma Avrom Elefroim, Vaishkol Avrom Leefroim, without a vov, es a kesed. So the Kleokor says, take a look at the Balaturim. The Balaturim pays attention to it, and the Balaturim says, yes, look, you know, it's not a coincidence, because Ephron, the Gamatria, how much is the Gamatria of Ephron without a vow? Ayin plus pay, 70 plus 80 is 150. Resh is 100. It's 200, and Nun is 50, in other words. 400, okay, no, so you see, Ephron accepts 400, so he becomes 400, and he adds, because, adds the Balaturim, the word, you know, the word for someone who is very cheap, right, not generous at all, like he wants to get up to the last penny, it's called a person with an Ayin Ra. Ayin Tov means with a generosity. Ayin Tov is the nature of Avraham Avinu. The opposite of Ayin Tov is Ayin Ra. He has a bad eye. Now, he can't stand somebody making a profit. You know, like some businessmen here. They are not satisfied. To make a profit is not good enough. Just to squeeze every cent out of you. That's when they are satisfied. That's called Ayin Ra. That's Ephron. Says the Balaturim. And if you figure out the gematria of the word Ayin Ra, right? Ayin 70, Yud. It's again 400. So he says, okay, it's no coincidence. So said the Kleokor something very interesting. We find four times in the top in the Tanakh the number 400. And on the surface, three out of the four, except in this one, there is a certain theme that's going through this story where the number 400 appears. What are the four situations? It says like this. One, by the 400 years of Golus Mitzrayim. The Gemara says, what was the direct cause of Golus Mitzrayim being in Egypt? What really caused? In other words, the historical link that caused the going down to Egypt. The selling of Yosef, right? They sold Yosef. And he ended up in Egypt, and then they had to come and settle in Egypt because they sold Yosef. And so the Gemara says, look what jealousy can do. That because of the jealousy, they ended up 400 years in Egypt. So, you see jealousy, Ayin Ra. Ayin Ra is jealousy. I see something, you have a nice Ksones Pasim, a nice shirt, so it bothers me. That's jealousy. So, the result is 400. The other time we find 400 is when Esav goes to fight Yaakov. In Vayishlach it says, how many people does Esav have? The Arba Meos Ishimoy. Again, 400. And again, what is the theme? The jealousy of Esav. You got the broker, I didn't. So he goes with 400. Okay? And again we find the number 400. There was a man called Nobel HaKarmeli in Sefer Shmuel who couldn't stand David HaMelech's success. It bothered him, the success of David HaMelech. And it bothers him, and it bothers him. And at the end, it gives him so much trouble that David HaMelech goes to Nobel HaKarmeli with how many people? 400 people. Those are the three times that we find 400 plus here. Now, on the surface, if you read really superficially the whole parsha, so Ephron seems like a very generous person on the very, very surface. Right, you know, why not? Sure, he's very respectful to Avraham Avinu. But once you understand the undercurrent, you realize there's a tremendous amount of ra'ayim, tremendous amount of jealousy, that he couldn't stand the fact that Avraham Avinu will make something, that Avraham Avinu shouldn't be squeezed out to the last penny. So that's what the hint is. Ephron loses the vov. Now, he becomes 400, which means that the whole idea of the 400 is when something disintegrates, and there is, it says like this, the number 40 is usually attached to something which is changed and established anew. 400 always is attached to disintegration, like jealousy causes disintegration. the opposite of unity. This is why it says like this. The name, the word Tam means something perfect. Starts with 400, Tav is how much? 400 and turns to Mem, which is 40. That is integration, something which is complete, Tam. To Mimut means something which is complete. What is the opposite of Tam? What means the complete disintegration? Met. When you turn around, Tam becomes from Mem, from 40 becomes 400, that's complete disintegration. That is death. Okay? So that is the meaning of the number 400.
Isn't Tam pure?
Yeah. Pure and full, complete, like it says, an animal that doesn't have a flaw. What is it called? Tamim. Tam. Okay, let's go on to the next parsha in chapter 24. Va'avrohom zokein bo bayomim, va'ashem berachis Avrom bakoyim. Avrom becomes an old man, and he blessed them with everything. So Rashi's pshat in the in Bakoyim means everything he wants. What does he want more than anything else, Avrom Avinu? The transference of his commitment to Hashem. How can he transfer the commitment? With a son. So Bakoil really means a son, says Rashi. It's our Bakoil. Bakoil, oile begamatria. How much is Bakoil begamatria? 52. Ben, that's a son. Because for Avraham Avinu, Bakoil is the Ben. That's how Rashi learns. Sounds like some Hasidic interpretation. But that's how Rashi learns the word Bakoil. Bakoil means a son. So, he decides, now that they have a son, I have to marry him off. I mean, he could have thought about it a long time before. How old is Yitzhak right now? Yitzhak right now is 40 years old. I mean, between chapter 23 and 24, go by 3 years. 40, says Avraham Avinu, you know what? He's ready to get married. It's extremely difficult. I mean, if he was Mekayim, Kola Torah Kula Cheloi Nitno. So, what happened when he was 18 years old or 20 years old? Right? No, 40 years old. And another chazal, which is very odd, is the chazal that says that after Haram Oirio, Avraham Avinu says, hey, what would have happened if really I would have had to slaughter him? He would have never gotten married. So now I have to think about getting married. That is the moment that who is born? Rivka. So, and I said, couldn't you have thought about it before? So it says like this, you see. It says in the Gemara, the Rambam brings it down the halacha, it says like this. Yivne bais v'acharkach yiso isho. Yilmad Torah v'acharkach yiso isho. Except if you can't learn Torah until you are married, so get married first. But why is it that Yivne bais v'acharkach yiso isho? Why? First get married, then you'll see how you establish yourself. Get married and then you learn. No. Limud Torah precedes getting married. Except if you can't learn Torah unless you are married. Why? Because it says like this. In order to get married, you have to be ready. It's a hachone. Yivne bais means that physically you have to get ready. Ve'achar kach yiso isho. And spiritually you have to get ready. Now, what does it mean getting ready? So it says like this. Since we believe in zivugin, that's zivugin, now somebody predestined. So the goal is that you should both reach the full potential, your full potential, in order that the zivug shouldn't have to go through the problems of adjustment. The more you come close to your potential, and your mate comes close to her potential, the easier the adjustment is it going to be, because it's closer to what the original plan of Hashem was. True. Yes. Now, what about if a certain person keeps growing and growing and growing and growing? So you can't say that that's the average person, that if I, you know, I'm 18 years old, 20 years old, that's it. But somebody keeps growing after 18, after 25. Right? So what would you say then? You have to wait. But there's another problem. It's as if, like, since he can keep going and going and going, and the zivug has to be made to measure, then the only time that the zivug can come into the world is when? when he reached that potential.
You hear the problem?
Yes. Right? For a zibu, which means that perfect partnership, to be established, you have to allow for a person who has such an enormous potential to reach that potential. Now, when did Yitzchok reach the highest potential of his midah, that midah of absolute subservience, that's the midah of Yitzchok? When did he reach that point?
Page 37.
37. So that means that it's only at 37 when he reaches his potential that a partner can be created to fit that potential. This is why it's not a coincidence that Rivka is born when Yitzchok is 37 years old. We are trying to describe that zivug, the made-to-measure zivug that has to be made to measure the moment he reaches that potential. Okay? But of course, you have to wait till she's 3 years old, because 3 years is the minimum, even if it was b'derech yoytze min haklal, in an extraordinary way that she developed, but before three, b'chlal she's not shaya. So therefore, it comes out that he had to be 40 years old. So it comes out that 40 years old is the first opportunity that Avraham Avinu has to think about marriage. Not, he thought about marriage long before, but to do something about it. So it's not that Avraham Avinu postponed it. Just the opposite. At the first opportunity, knowing the circumstances, he decides, I have to do something. Up to now, I had in mind that Yitzchok Avinu is developing. Obviously, there has to be somebody made to measure for him. Okay, now it's the minimum. 3 years old. And it could be she's older, but the minimum that she can be now is 3 years old. So now is the time. Okay? So if so comes out, that it's not that it's very late. Just the opposite. This is the first opportunity. So, it says, Vayomer Avraham el Avdoi Zekan Beisoi HaMoshel Bechol Asher Lo. So he says to his servant, who is the head of his household, who controls everything. Why is that important that he controls everything? Just say somebody a good Eved. No, he controls everything. What does he tell him? Simlo yotcho tachas yirechi. Swear, you must make an oath. That what? That you will not take a wife for my son from Bnois Knoan, and you'll take a wife from all the way back from Mesopotamia. Okay? So what is the stress here? He's a man that controls everything. Now, if you have someone that controls all your affairs, obviously you trust him, right? Otherwise, how can he control all your affairs? Everything, every business deal, he's on top of things. So if you trust him, why does he have to swear? So what the Torah, of course, is stressing is there is one thing that's more important than all the money in the world. The future of his son. Right? So that's what he's stressing. Even though he's Moshe Bechol Asher Lo. And you might have thought that a person that you trust with everything, of course you're going to trust him with the girl that he's going to find. No, that not. That requires an oath. So, he tells him to go El Arsim El Molati. So the Meforshim say already why. What's the difference between Canaan and Ur Kasdim, or the place in Mesopotamia? What's the difference? As a matter of fact, it says that the people in Mesopotamia were over the Avodah Zarah. That's why he had to run away. So the Meforshim say, because even though ideologically the people in Canaan are superior, they have a good teacher, Avraham Avinu is there, so ideologically they are superior, but as far as midos are concerned, the midos of the people in Canaan were worse. And when you, it's a very interesting episode, he says, when you marry someone, the midos, the characteristics, are more important than the ideology. Because midos go over genetically. Ideologies don't go over genetically. Zabar Banel says this. Right? So he says, this is the reason why Avraham Avinu, even though he had followers, he had students, he had a lot of people, believers in God. He was very successful, Avraham Avinu. So he could have gotten a lot of girls who believed in God. That meant nothing to Avraham Avinu. He would rather get a girl from the society that are over the Avodah Zarah, idol worshippers, because as far as their real characteristics, they are superior than the characteristics of Canaan. That's what he wants. That's what Avraham Avinu says. Then it says like this. Vayomer elov ho'eved. Ulai lo yishoyveo yisholo leches achara elo oretz azoz. Perhaps the girl won't want to come to this land. Can I take him there? Can I take Yitzchak there? Fair question. What about if she doesn't want to come? Vayomer Elov Avraham. He shomer lechofin toshives bli shomo. That never do. And in Posuk Ches, Vim loyser veoyser lo lechasach arecho. Vini kiso mishvosi. If she doesn't want to go, then that's it. But never dare take Yitzchak out of Eretz Yisrael. So there is a very interesting observation here. You know, everything that Torah says, every word is necessary. It's never extra. So pay attention to the words of Eliezer to Avraham Avinu. Vayemer lo voevet, ulai lo yisoyveo isha lo leches acharai. We'll pay attention to the word ulai in another opportunity. If the woman won't want to come, el ho'oretz hazois, to this land. Why does he have to say to this land? You hear that on the surface that is unnecessary, that's extra. More, when Avraham Avinu answers him on this question, in Pasuk Ches he says, Vim lo yisoveo isha lo leches acharecho, what should he have added? El ho'oretz hazois, doesn't say that in Pasuk Ches. Why is the words El Ho'oretz Azos missing from Avraham Avinu's answer? And it's there in Eliezer's question. Isn't that significant? Now, the point is like this. It fits perfectly with Abarbanel's shot. If Eliezer says, maybe the girl won't want to come after me to this land, what is he stressing? This land, that what? Maybe she'll say, what? I'm going to live in Canaan among all those corrupt girls or people? Remember, according to Abarbanel Shad, that the Midos were corrupt in Canaan. So maybe the girl won't want to come. El Ho'oretz Hazos? That's what he's asking. So the point is that Avraham Avinu says like this. In Posuk Gimel, he says like this, something else which is very odd. Vashbiacho b'ashem elokei ha'shomayim elokei oretz. Right, you must swear to me. Asher lo yisikach isho libni mibnois ha'knani. Don't take a girl from Canaan. Asher onoichi yoshev bekirboi, that I am amongst them. Why did Avraham Avinu have to stress that I am amongst them? Of course, I mean, we know. Bnois Canaan are bnois Canaan. Okay? Point is like this. There is a famous Malbim that says that there is a tremendous difference between Onochi and Ani. Right? He could have said, Asher Ani Yoshev Bikirboi. He says, Onochi Yoshev Bikirboi. What is the difference between Ani and Onochi? Says the Malbim the following. You know that in Hebrew, there are no synonyms. You can't say, all is the same. Onochi, Ani, it's all the same. It's not the same. If it would be the same, you wouldn't need two words. The difference, says the Malbim, is the following. When I say ani holeich, I'm stressing what I'm doing. It happens to be that I am walking, but the stress is on the walking. But if I say onochi holeich, the stress is not on the action, but on the person. It's onochi holeich. It's me that's walking, not anybody, it's me. The stress is on the person and not on the action. This is why when it says onochi Hashem Elokecho, right? The stress is onochi. It's Hashem who says onochi. This is why the Malbim says Chazal can make an interpretation in the words of Yaakov to Yitzchak. Remember the words. Onochi Esav Choyrecho. Doesn't say Ani Esav Choyrecho. Right? Why? Because Yaakov Avinu wanted to make sure that the word Ani is not used, because if we say Ani Esav Choyrecho, then he's saying clearly, I am Esav. But if you say the word Onochi, it's as if there is a comma after Onochi. It's Onochi. I am whoever I am. Esav Choyrecho. In other words, the Onochi stands by itself. Ani never stands by itself. It's always Doku. Onochi stands by itself. Ani Olei. Doesn't fit. Onochi Olei. That's it. Because if I'm saying Olei, it's Ani Olei. Do you hear that's the Malbim's Yisod, differentiating between Ani and Onofi. So, according to the Malbim, what does Avraham Avinu mean when he says, Asher lo tikach isho livnim mibnoi zaknani, Asher onochi yoshev bekirbo? Obviously stressing, but I am here, which means like this. Even though the knanim are no good, but don't let her worry, because I am here. In other words, she has nothing to worry about the characteristic of the place. Asher onochi yosh, I'm here, and as long as I am here, she has nothing to worry about. Okay? So therefore, Avraham Avinu, even before Eliezer asks, he already answered the question. So therefore, when he says, maybe the girl won't want to go, Avraham Avinu says, maybe the girl won't want to go after you, not to this land, after you. What does it mean? Because of you. Maybe she won't like you, maybe she won't trust you. So this is why in Posuk Ches, Vimloi Shoy Veoishel Oleches Acharecho, don't say Lo Retz Azois, because that already he answered. Asher no Chiyosh, because I'm here, and as long as Avraham Avinu is here, whoever wants to stay in the land is safe, as far as the Midos are concerned. Okay? So this is why Avraham Avinu takes out the Lo Retz Azois, because it's something that he already took care of by saying, Asher no Chiyosh, because the problem is, maybe Eliezer won't be to her liking, she won't trust him. So, if she doesn't trust you, then you are free. But he doesn't mention the Lo Retz Azois. Okay, we'll stop here. Now, there's somebody who's going to be saying the shir tomorrow.